Well, hello. Welcome back to the Chaos Ball Podcast. A pre-kickoff, is it pre? Or is it just like a kickoff winter meetings podcast? It's not like this is an active meeting or podcast, and I'm not actively going to change what I say based on anything that happens at the winter meetings, because this is already recorded. But I'm releasing this and doing a podcast right before the winter meetings because I have the time. I want to chat about a couple things and just kind of a calm before the winter meeting storm, because I feel like the Mariners are going to be a little bit more active at the winter meetings this year. I just feel like that seems to be the vibe. And now I could be Charlie Brown and the Mariners could be Lucy and making meaningful improvements to the team at the winter meetings could be the football. And I'm willing to take that risk because last year, I feel like we all expected them to be more active at the winter meetings. And then they just bragged about how much they wrote on a whiteboard and didn't talk to any players, which was an odd choice. I feel like they're not going to do that this year. I'd put my money on them not bragging about that back-to-back seasons. Pretty confident in that. What makes me more confident is they really haven't done anything this winter at all yet, besides non-tender a few fellas. A couple like minor things that they've done, but come the winter meetings last year, they had already made some trades. They already had made the Luis Urias, Isaiah Campbell trade with the Red Sox. I think they had traded for Blake Hunt already, although minor. I know they acquired Cody Bolton by then, and then they made the Gino trade to the D-backs for Zavala and Vargas. And then I think at the very beginning of the winter meetings, if I have my timeline correct, it was at the very beginning, the Marco Gonzalez, Evan White, Jared Kelnick Braves trade was made, and that was it. And then they didn't make any moves until January. There were no free agent signings, none during the winter meetings, that is. I mean, they signed, as we know, Mitch Garver on Christmas Eve. That's not when the winter meetings were happening. And then all the rest of the moves were January. So right now, they really haven't done much of anything at all, really. They are poised to probably make trades. I don't want to get duped into thinking they're going to do something, but there's been plenty of trade rumors and a couple of free agent rumors with their name attached, which is sure. They are just rumors, and every time there's a rumor with a free agent and the Mariners, I get very skeptical. But I put more merit in rumors from actual reporters than, like, let's say, BR walk-off, Bleacher Report walk-off, saying, oh, a destination for Christian Walker is the Seattle Mariners. Like, sure, they need a first baseman. He's a first baseman. By that logic, yes. Same with Alex Bregman. They did the same thing. I don't really put any stock in that. But there's reports that the Mariners are interested in Christian Walker. You know, there's reports that the Mariners are interested in a certain man coming out of the KBO, who I'll speak about later in this episode. But recently, there's been a lot more smoke around trading with teams in Chicago. Both, in fact, in Chicago. And three trade rumors, potentially, in Chicago, which Jerry doesn't do. Jerry does not do three-team trades. He is a strictly monogamous man. He trades one team at a time, all right? Particularly the Rays. But he makes a lot of other trades, but rarely involving three teams. So that would be pretty unique. But he's been talking, seemingly, with the Cubs. The Cubs are a team that make a lot of sense for him to be talking to. I think the Cubs and the Red Sox, perhaps, and the Orioles, I'd say, are teams that make sense for him to be talking to. And the Rays, but that's because, of course, he's talking to the Rays. He's always talking to them. Those three teams make sense because they need pitching, and they're kind of on the cusp of contention. The Cubs are in a weird spot, I'd say. The Cubs are in a weird spot. But the Red Sox and the Orioles, both AL East teams that are kind of poised to be contenders next year with just a few additions this offseason. Obviously, Soto is one of them, potentially. for the Red Sox, and it sounds like he's going to sign during the winter meetings, which is really exciting. So maybe we'll know that by next pod who he'll sign with. Won't be the Mariners for sure, 100%. Will not be. But those teams make sense. They have some decent offensive pieces for sure. And they need pitching. They just need pitching. Like, the Cubs pitching staff is good, but they could use another good pitcher, particularly right-hand starter. They have now a good amount of lefty pitchers, but again, you can never have too much pitching when you're trying to contend. And what the Cubs have that, like, the Orioles don't really have. The Orioles have a lot of cost control hitters, and those will come at a steeper price. What the Cubs have is more expensive hitters, particularly Cody Bellinger. Cody Bellinger and Nico Horner are the two names that are being thrown around as rumors that the Mariners are interested in. Plenty of teams are interested in Cody Bellinger's services. I think the Yankees and the Astros and the Mariners were in the last tweet of MLB trade rumors of who is interested. I think the Yankees make the most sense out of all three of those teams. I mean, the Astros make some sense. I just don't know if they have the horses to get that deal done, to be honest with you. I think the Yankees do. I think the Mariners do. But I think it makes more sense for the Yankees because I don't know how much longer they want to play Judge in center field. But if they do, he can just play first base. And they need a first baseman. I mean, respectfully, to Anthony Rizzo, I think Cody Bellinger would be an upgrade. Is Anthony Rizzo even on the team anymore? I'm washed. Is he not a free agent? Whatever. The Mariners and Cody Bellinger is an awkward fit for me. Partially because it would have to, and I think it's less appealing to the Cubs because it's just going to have to include Mitch Haniger in this deal and an extra prospect thrown on top because Cody Bellinger is getting paid like $27 million next year. Then it's a player option for 2026 for, I think, $24 million, something around there. That's expensive. That's an expensive contract for the Mariners. Now, the only other option, if they were going to trade, let's say, like, an Emerson Hancock and, like, two prospects and Haniger for Cody Bellinger, which would be a very weird trade. The only other trade I could see that makes sense with the money, and you probably think this as well, it's Luis Castillo. Luis Castillo makes around that type of money. So theoretically, you wouldn't have to give up any prospect capital. I don't think you'd be able to get up Mitch Haniger in this trade, but that would make no sense if you're already getting rid of Luis Castillo. I really love Luis Castillo. I really do enjoy watching him pitch. I think definitely there were some alarm bells this season and last season, as I went over in my season recaps, of just he's clearly hitting his aging curve, but he's kind of hitting it pretty gracefully. It's not like he's completely fell off, and I don't think he will. I think he's still got plenty to offer at the major league level, but he makes a good amount of money, and if the Cubs really do want a solid starting pitcher, and he wouldn't necessarily have to be their ace at all. He wouldn't be, really. I mean, it would be Justin Steele or Shota Imanaga, probably, right? Who did they just sign? Like, it's lost on me who they literally just signed. Because Kyle Hendricks is finally gone, and that is super helpful for this team. And the Angels willingly signed him. Oh, Matthew Boyd. I was stalling so I could look that up because I didn't want to pause the podcast. Matt Boyd, a Seattle native. Matt Boyd, shout out. I think that's a good little core. I think Luis Castillo added to that with him and Jameson Taillon as your right-handed pitchers with those other three. That's a really solid rotation right there. And so that is what I could see making sense for Cody Bellinger. I don't know if the Cubs would want to do a straight swap. I don't know if the Mariners would want to do a straight swap of Castillo and Bellinger. Value-wise, it might be pretty similar, honestly. I think Luis Castillo would help the Cubs more. Well, no, I shouldn't say that. But it's weird because how much of a premium are you paying for Cody Bellinger, the center fielder, or are you paying for Cody Bellinger, the first baseman? Because obviously he can play both, and that's great. That's super helpful. that would have been a little bit more helpful at the start of last season, because now you have Victor Robles on the roster, who, even if he's not hitting, he can offer you speed and he can play center field, which you didn't really have at the start of last season. You didn't really have a good backup center fielder, and now you do, because Julio is taking the starting spot if he's healthy every day out there. And so, are you paying a premium for Cody Bellinger, the first baseman? And then, do you think he's going to produce enough in Seattle to even warrant acquiring him as a first baseman alone? And then that would mean Rayleigh plays more in the outfield this year. It would have to mean that. It would have to mean Rayleigh almost exclusively plays the outfield when a right-handed pitcher is on the mound if Bellinger's healthy. The good thing about Bellinger is he's not like a super platoony guy. You can play him against left-handed pitching and you wouldn't sweat it. So that would definitely be something. So you could play Bellinger at first when a lefty is pitching. But then does that kind of throw a wrench in their plans to re-sign Justin Turner, who then that limits their options at DH because Rayleigh might DH versus lefties if he's not playing the outfield. Like, there's just a lot of... I think acquiring Cody Bellinger, while I do think it would be good, I wouldn't hate if they did that. It would glut up the roster a little bit. It would create a little bit of a sticky situation with how they shift around their roster. And obviously, Jerry DePoto is no stranger to making roster overhauls that might be meaningless, but the roster is turned over. So hey, look at that. I just don't know if Cody Bellinger makes the most sense. Because I think it would just have to be Luis Castillo or Mitch Haniger included in that trade, and that kind of makes it harder for me, because I don't know what Luis Castillo's value is to other teams at the moment, especially in a park like Wrigley, and he's been zapped by the home run past couple of years. That's not a particularly good combination, so it might take like Castillo and a low level prospect potentially to even get Bellinger. So we'll see. We'll see what happens there. The other one was Nico Hoerner. Nico Hoerner's a fine baseball player. I'll say that. The biggest thing why he makes sense through the Mariners is he's a second baseman. Sounds like the Cubs are trying to move him right now. He's on a pretty normal contract. He signed a 3-year, $35 million deal before the 2024 season to buy out some last years of ARB. So now would have been his third year of ARB, but he's just in that second year of his contract. So he's making $11.5 million in 2025 and then $12 in 2026. And then he's a free agent, and he's 27 right now. So there's room, like, if they do really like what they see and like what they get from him, the Mariners, that is, they could just end up re-signing him because he would be entering free agency at age 30. Like, exactly when a lot of free agents hit. So they could sign him to another shorter, like another 3-year deal, potentially, if he's just similar to what he has been. Nico Hoerner's just a good baseball player. He has been for a while. He's a very contact-first hitter. Lots of speed. He's stolen, I think, like 100 bags over the past three seasons or close to that. He plays a really good second base defensively. And again, contact ability is average, is solid. He gets on base at a decent clip. Doesn't hit for a whole lot of power, but consistently has just been a slightly above average hitter. Like, let's just go to his baseball reference. From... He made his debut in 2019, briefly, then played in 2020. Those years are, like, he put up one WAR in both those seasons over, like, 200 plate appearances. Sure, we kind of knew who Nico Hoerner was at that point. 2021 was his first season, like, was going to play a lot, and then he only played 170 plate appearances. But in those, 106 OPS plus, and then 2022, the last 3 years have been full seasons. So he put up a 105 OPS plus, a 102 OPS plus, and a 101 OPS plus, with his WAR being, baseball reference, 4.2, 5.1, and 3.7. A lot of that is, again, defense, base running. And that's what he offers. I think he's close to league average bat, but he like fulfills that kind of leadoff hitter type of role. He's not going to hit for a lot of power, but he can swipe bags and play great defense at second base, and he can play shortstop. That's also very helpful. I think the Mariners need a guy who can play shortstop at a decent level as a backup that isn't named Dylan Moore. I think Dylan Moore, super valuable to have on the roster still as like a emergency guy who can play third base or second shortstop. I don't know if Ryan Bliss can play shortstop very well. I'm not exactly sure. Potentially if Cole Young finds his way up to the majors this year, I know he can also play shortstop. I imagine he'd be up to play second base, but that's also an option here. But Horner can cover shortstop if you need, and he's just a fantastic second baseman. This makes more sense to me. It's a modest salary. It's $11 million. Like, that is feasible enough to where they wouldn't necessarily have to give up Haniger, but if they wanted to, they have the prospect capital to do that. They have just, if they wanted to get rid of Haniger and get a useful piece back, this wouldn't be one of the stupid trades they made last season. This would actually make more sense to me. If they're willing to offload more prospect capital with Haniger to get Horner, that would make sense to me. I would just cut Haniger. I would release him and eat the money and just hold on to the prospects and use them to get better players. But that would make some sense to me to do this for Horner. It would balance, like, Mitch is making like 17. So, I mean, Horner, if they really want to make the salaries like match, but the Cubs have more money than the Mariners, so they could probably eat it. But either way, Horner for a prospect, Horner for Emerson Hancock. And it's freaking, I don't know, Ben Williamson or something. Is that a fair trade? I'm not exactly sure. But those are the two guys from the Cubs. And then the old wrench that has been thrown into this is there was rumblings of the White Sox getting in on this. And I think this is because of the salary thing. So I think the Cubs probably want Garrett Crochet. And if the Mariners don't want to trade any of their current five starting pitchers, which I don't think they want to, they, like Jerry said, they don't plan on doing that. And I don't think he's straight up lying. I think he would. I think he would trade Castillo or Miller or Wu. I think he would trade one of those guys if the right offer came in, but I don't think they're actively like trying to offload those guys for a bat. This would be interesting with the White Sox and the Cubs, because the White Sox could send Crochet to the Cubs, get a prospect or two back from the Cubs. Horner could go to the Mariners, and the Mariners could give a prospect or two back to either team, probably to the White Sox and maybe one to the Cubs. Like, I don't know how this would work, but this would make more sense to me, to where the Mariners could just give prospects to the White Sox. The White Sox give Crochet to the Cubs, and the Cubs give Horner to the Mariners. You know, that like kind of really aids the Mariners. Like, if they can rope the White Sox into this trade and just give up a prospect or two, basically paying for Horner, paying for Crochet through Horner with prospects, I wouldn't hate that. I wouldn't hate that at all, because then you just get Nico Horner, and I think he would come to the Mariners and he'd probably have the worst year of his career, because that's just kind of how this goes. But that shouldn't, I say that all the time, but that should not, that's not going to prevent me from being like optimistic about a move. I was very optimistic about Jorge Polanco, and look where that happened. They could acquire Brandon Lau, who I love, and I'd be wildly optimistic, and Brandon Lau would probably have a 600 OPS on the Mariners. That's just how this goes. You know how it works. But again, that should not like preclude them from just continuing to try. They have to continue to try, no matter what happens at the black hole that is second base. So that's where the rumors are at with the Mariners right now. I mean, they're rumored to be in on Pete Alonso, apparently, according to John Hammond, who had a very bad night the other day on the internet. Very bad night. I don't want to focus on it. I tweeted about it a little bit, but no, I'm not going to focus on what happened with John Hammond. But according to him, the Mariners are like a suitor for Pete Alonso. It sounds like he has an offer from the Mets for 6 years, allegedly. I can't see the Mariners offering him 6 years because it'd have to be 6 years, like 150, right? Or 130, 140. It'd have to be closer. It'd have to be between 25 and 30 million, I imagine, if it is 6 years. So what would 6 years, 25 million be? 125? So maybe, yeah, 150. It's like 20, what is that? There's 30 a year, straight up. Close enough. Yeah, like, I just don't see that happening. I think Christian Walker is more feasible because I think he'd be cheaper. Like, Christian Walker, I don't think would sign six for 150 or even close. I feel like Christian Walker would, the Mariners would structure that like 5 years, 5 years, 115 with an option for the last year or something like that. That would make more sense. I don't know if Pete Alonso makes more sense. I would like Pete Alonso on the Mariners. He'd make the team better, certainly. I'm not really buying that the Mariners are a legitimate suitor for him at all. I just feel like they're way more likely to re-sign Justin Turner or Carlos Santana and play them at first with Luke Raley for 2025 and make a more significant move for a third baseman. I don't see them really signing a first baseman for that amount of money. But we'll see. I guess I'm super intrigued to see what they do with the winter meetings. I have no idea. I think they're going to make a trade. I think there will be a trade done at the winter meetings with the Mariners. Free agency, I can't predict free agency with this team, but I think they're more likely to sign a free agent at the winter meetings than last season. So there's that. I'm keeping this episode short. I'm keeping it short. There's more I could talk about, but I'll talk about two players in particular that make sense for the Mariners that potentially could sign at the winter meetings. I think if they're going to sign anyone, could be these two. And also I'm going to talk about the golden at bat rule at the end of this one that's been going on. Because I had a very similar idea. I don't know if I shared it on the show, but I have a list in my notes app of just some pretty tame ideas on how to make baseball more interesting. There's a range. There's some that are just absolutely unhinged, kind of like this golden at bat, and some that are like just kind of fun little jokes. I have a list of rules. One of them is similar to the golden at bat, but a little different, but I'll get into that and round out the end of the show with that. But two players I want to talk about that make sense for the Mariners. They're both named Kim. Ha-Seong Kim, the current Major League Baseball player who's been playing for the San Diego Padres for the last 4 years, and then Hye-Seong Kim, which I hope I'm saying that correctly. Very similar name. Identical besides the first couple letters. Ha versus Hai. H-Y-E versus H-A. Ha-Seong Kim, let's start with him. The case for him is, I would say, less risky than Hye-Seong Kim, maybe a lower floor. I mean, they're kind of similar. They bat from different sides of the plate, but they're pretty similar players, not only just because they're both Korean. But Ha-Seong Kim, I mean, you're probably familiar with his work if you've watched baseball the past couple of years. He's just been a good baseball player, man. Like, very similar to Nico Horner. Like, the bat does not jump off the page when you look at the stats. Like, his best seasons were 22 and 23. He had a 105 and 107 OPS plus, respectively. 4.9 and a 5.8 WAR. A lot of that, base running and defense. He has been probably the best defensive second baseman in baseball the past couple seasons. Maybe up there with Nico Horner. And he can also play a really good shortstop. He can play third base. He's a super valuable asset just up the middle. He can play both positions very well. And his bat, like I said, that was just above league average. If he can stay league average, like, again, pretty decent contact ability. I'd say more power than a Nico Horner, but not like that much power. I think it's you'd want him to stay above 95 OPS plus, but he probably wouldn't eclipse 110. He'd be in that range. But then with great defense and his base running, that's like a 3-4 win player consistently every year. Like last year, he had a 96 OPS plus, but it was a 2.6 baseball reference war. Like he did not look amazing at the plate, but he just was still an effective player. He makes a lot of sense. One, the main reason, not that expensive. I don't think he's looking for a super long-term deal. I don't think teams are going to give him a super long-term deal. He is 29. I think he would get a like 3-year deal. A 3-year deal with maybe even an option thrown in. Like maybe a 4-year deal with 2 options. Something like that. I don't think you're going to sign him to significant money for more than like 2-3 seasons. I don't think he's going to require significant money at all. Like MLB Trade Rumors, which is probably the best and most consistently accurate predictor. They're not perfect. There's always the market every year always shifts and always kind of dictates a lot of these deals. But they're fairly reliable. You can kind of count on them to be pretty close to contract estimates on what they think Ha-Seong Kim will get around. And he declined an $8 million mutual option for the 2025 season. Took a buyout from the Padres to enter free agency. I think the Padres are definitely probably maybe the favorite to just re-sign him to a longer-term deal, but I think the Mariners are interested. It sounds like he's rumored to get around a $10 to $12 million AAV, seeking just a couple of years, like maybe a 2-year with an opt-out after that. So 3 years potentially, maybe just a 1-year pillow contract that might be like 1 year, $13 million. Like could take a Bellinger deal, like a 1+1, a 1-year $12 million deal with a option at the end for another $12 million, like something like that. So I think the Mariners could come in here and just offer him straight up 2 guaranteed years for $25 million, and I think he'd be happy with that, or 2 years plus a 3rd-year option for totaling in the mid-30s, something like that. Like that is very affordable for the team. Doesn't especially address the need for a big bat in the lineup, but fills a hole at second base where the players that they've got at second base, like Polanco and freaking Adam Frazier, like these were potentially better bats. Like Polanco especially, it wasn't like they were getting him for his defense. His floor was like, he's just been a good hitter for a while, and that kind of collapsed. Still ended up being like a very close to league average hitter anyway. But it was like they're getting him for a potentially quite above league average second baseman bat. They didn't get that. What they could do is just shoot for lower and get a guy like Ha-Seong Kim, who is like, hey, he can play a great second base. He's going to be great defensively. Perry Hill doesn't even need to work his magic on him. He's already great. He could steal bases, which they do need. They need speed on this team. This is not a very fast team. And I think the biggest thing for me is I don't want to see Dylan Moore and Ryan Bliss play second base very much next year. Frankly, I think if I want to see anyone play a lot of second base next year, and if a lot of stuff would have to go right, Cole Young. If Cole Young just lights AAA on fire for a couple months, gets called up in June to play second base, I'd be happy with that. Even then, I still think they should sign a second baseman like this, just to have a stable second baseman who can steal bags and play good defense. I don't think they should try to shoot for the moon and get a good offensive second baseman if it's a Brandon Lau. I'd like it, just don't see that happening. I like this potential stability, because then they can really actually try to get a good hitting third baseman or first baseman, which they should. So Ha-Seong Kim, and also he can play shortstop, like I said, which is super helpful, because J.P. Crawford's a huge wild card for this team next year. I'm so hoping optimistically that he bounces back, but we'll see. We'll see. Don't know if he will. That's a fairly big if at the moment. So Hyesung Kim, that's an option. And the other Kim, Hyesung Kim, like I mentioned, he's coming out of the KBO. He is one of the more highly, I mean, he's, besides Roki Sasaki, he's like the guy right now that's coming out of either the KBO or MPP. And he's just a good hitter. He's like profiles very similarly to a lot of hitters we see come out of Southeast Asia in general. He is just a good hitter. He has hit over 300 in the KBO for three straight years. He just bat to ball skills are really great. He is decent power, not a whole lot of power, but really fast and really solid defensive second baseman, similar to Hyesung Kim. And like Nico Horner, like similar to those second baseman types I was talking about. Didn't walk a whole lot. Walked decently. And didn't really strike out a lot. Just would profile very much as a contact heavy, putting the ball in play, good defensive, speedy second baseman. That would also improve the team. And I think this gives you a potential ceiling that a guy like Nico Horner or Hyesung Kim can't, because Hyesung Kim is 25 years old. So I think he's going to be a little bit more expensive probably because he's 25 years old, but also not that expensive because while he is 25 and he's been a great player in the KBO, KBO pitching is just simply not good. Like, those stats are really good. Like, an 870-ish OPS in the KBO is great. That translates fine to Major League Baseball. The pitching is just not quite there. Whereas MPB, you can kind of rely on the pitching being better. Like, if a good hitter comes out of MPB, it's more reliable than when a good hitter comes out of the KBO. But I think there's plenty of talent here. I would really be interested in the Mariners signing him, especially just to get back into that Southeast Asian baseball market that they haven't been, especially for position players. I think I mentioned it last episode, who was the last player they signed from either the KBO or MPB? It was Yusei Kikuchi, and then position player-wise, I'm pretty sure it was Daeho Lee. Like, I could check this, but I'm pretty confident the last position player they signed out of Japan or Korea was Daeho Lee. So there's that. I think they need to get back in this market. I think Kim, if he unlocks any sort of power, or if he even just becomes like a 300 hitter in Major League Baseball, who's very fast and can play a great second base, that's a super valuable player to have on a team that doesn't really have that. I think MLB Trade Rumors has his contract potentially at like a 3-ish year deal. Like, he is 25, so he could command a 4-year deal if there was 4 years. If the Mariners had to pay 4 years to get him, I would do that because they might just have to do that if there's multiple suitors. But it sounds like it'll be 3 to 4 years between 40 to 60 million with maybe an option thrown in there. So like 15 million per ish, 10 to 15, I imagine. Maybe they can get away with straight up just giving him 4 guaranteed years and offering him 12 million a year. To lower the AAV a little bit with just 4 guaranteed years. That would be interesting. I'm super interested personally in Hyesung Kim. So I hope I really hope this is their second base solution and they trade for a bigger bat at the corners or sign a bigger bat at the corners and then take it from there. See what they can get for a pitcher potentially. But I like both Kims, I like Nico Horner, I like all of those options at second base. Again, I'm quite skeptical on if Ryan Bliss is a good Major League Baseball player, and Dylan Moore, he should be the utility man. He started too much last year to be a utility man. I will keep saying it. He needs to not be mentioned as a potential starter at second base. I don't necessarily need to see that. So, we'll see. I'm done talking about the Mariners. We'll see what they do at the winter meetings. I hope they're active in a good way. But before I go, the golden at-bat. The golden at-bat rule you can put a hitter up at any point in the lineup, no matter what the next hitter is, just so you can in the bottom of the or the top of the ninth of the World Series, or you don't have Alex Verdugo hitting, you can just say, hey, Juan Soto, I know you just hit a few at-bats ago, but you, get in there. Like, that makes sense. Like, you can basically manufacture the Mike Trout, Shohei Ohtani, World Baseball Classic ending that happened organically. This rule was panned, like almost unanimously on the internet. Manfred, like, does this a lot. This one felt more concrete, though, because it said it was supposed to discuss at the owners' meetings, and that's not always the case. Usually Manfred just kind of, like, with the pitch clock, years ago he did this. So I was like, hey, we're just kind of discussing this. He puts it out into the sphere of baseball consciousness with fans, and I feel like they're quite good at just seeing the sentiment. I don't think the sentiment was good for the zombie run, and they did that, which I hate, but I digress. This is similar, but this was discussed at the owners' meetings, and he said this, I believe, on a radio or a podcast, and it was like, yeah, it was discussed, golden at bat, and everyone's like, no, this sucks, and I don't necessarily disagree with these people, but I want some baseball fans to open their minds a little bit. I don't think we should universally shit on any ideas that come from Major League Baseball. And that's not me saying we should put our full faith in Rob Manfred and Major League Baseball to make these decisions. But I think we should keep our minds open to any and all ways to make the sport a little bit more interesting to people. I don't need this golden at bat rule. I don't think it's even going to be implemented. I personally don't think it's a great rule for Major League Baseball. But I think people need to just, like, consider it a little bit more. I think, imagine if you mentioned the pitch clock in 2000, like, if you mentioned the pitch clock a while ago, and even when it was first announced, people were like, no, this is brutal. Baseball doesn't have a clock. And even when it was first implemented in spring training, I remember people still, it was like, and me myself too, I was like, I don't know if I love it, I'm not sure about this, feels not very baseball like and then the season happened and everyone loved it. I'm not saying the golden bat is the same thing, I'm just saying sports need to evolve. My whole thing is they need to just let these new rules sink in for a few years now. Like, they just keep, like, proposing rules, and I'm all for updating the sport and keeping it interesting and trying to stay relevant, because you kind of have to get out in front of this stuff before in 30 years you realize you should have made these changes already and the fans are now completely gone. You kind of just have to swing for the fences, no pun intended, and, like, go for it sometimes with these rules to keep your sport spicy, to hopefully have the fan base keep lasting for another few decades and decades and decades. But I think they're, like, doing these too fast. I think the major rule changes a couple years ago, where they were major, it was pitch clock, bigger bases, and the zombie runner and extra innings. I think they need to keep those for, like, without any more rule changes for a couple more years. I think very soon we're going to get the challenge system, I hope, for balls and strikes. But even then, I still think that should wait another year or two. And then after that, that's a pretty big rule change. I think there should be another, like, 5-year grace period where it's like, okay, this is the sport now for 5 years. We're going to learn. We're going to take all the learnings from this. And then maybe we think about another rule. Maybe the golden at bat comes up again in some different form. Because I don't think it's necessarily a bad, like, thought to think about, like, hey, at the end of a game, it would be objectively, it would be kind of anti-baseball, but it would be objectively cool to put your best hitter against, like, Emmanuel Clase in the bottom of the ninth of, like, an ALCS game. I don't think anyone could argue that that wouldn't be entertaining. It would be. I tweeted out that this is a phenomenal rule. Like, I think in a vacuum, excellent. Excellent concept of a rule. Just maybe not for Major League Baseball, because Major League Baseball is not that silly of a league yet. They still take themselves pretty seriously, and this rule would be utterly unserious, like, in a good way. But I just don't think the league is quite there yet. Personally, I love rules like this. I think sillier rules in sports make them more fun. But Major League Baseball, especially, I just don't think they're ready to be this silly. They need to wade into the silly waters a little bit more. Like the zombie runner, not silly. That's just a stupid rule. That's not silly at all. A golden at bat is insane. Like it's really funny to think about doing that in Major League Baseball. My similar rule here that I had was a one at bat per game, you get to use a metal bat. This is very similar, but it doesn't break up the lineup order. Like imagine you're in the eighth and you're down two runs. The bases are loaded and Giancarlo Stanton walks to the plate with a metal composite bat and just nukes one. 125 off the bat. Grand slam, 480 feet out of T-Mobile Park in left field. Wouldn't that be sweet? Like, it would probably present some real scares for third baseman and pitchers with a Major League Baseball player using a metal bat. But I had this rule, like, a year ago. I had that idea. That it'd just be fun. That's less wacky. Or it might be more wacky, but less, like, sanctity of the rules breaking, you know? Because you're not breaking up the lineup. And the lineup has been a thing in baseball for like 150 years, like unbroken, really. It's like one of the main constants in the sport. So I don't want to keep talking about that rule. I don't think it's going to happen. I think the way it came about was like Manfred was like, yeah, we kind of discussed it. I thought that was funny. I don't think it's going to happen, but I think it's just a fun rule, but not yet. Not yet for Major League Baseball. But I'm going to end it here. Thank you for listening this week. I will probably have a pod next week. I'm sure plenty of stuff in baseball will happen at the winter meetings. Like I didn't even talk about like Blake Snell or Shane Bieber. I didn't have a lot to say about those signings more than people who are fans of those teams and other people have already talked about it. Didn't see the need to talk about it. But if Soto signs, I'll certainly talk about that. And yeah, looking forward to seeing what the Mariners do at the winter meetings. One last thing. If you're listening to this right now, you're a true listener. You are a true listener of the Castball Podcast. I want to throw something at you here. In relation to Jerry DePoto reacquiring Austin Shenton after trading him away, after drafting him, call him Austin Shentonall, the way Jerry DePoto fell off the wagon and reacquired him. Is that anything, do you think? Is that got potential? I wrote that down the other day. I didn't want to lead with that. It's kind of aggressive. But I know if you're listening to this 42.5 minutes in, you are a true fan and you can take that from me. So please let me know if that is anything. And if you think that I should never have said that, but I will sign off there. I hope you have a good rest of the week. I hope you personally have a great winter meetings. And of course, I'll leave you with a go Mariners going into the winter meetings, go Mariners, go whiteboards, go sign Hyesung Kim.